Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks very much, Dermot. How are you doing on this Thursday afternoon? How are you occupying the children? That's a big challenge, isn't it? Like back in the day, it wasn't a challenge. Get out there, come in when you're hungry. That was it. Now there's a camp for this and a camp for that, and you have to have a diary and a calendar and plan everything from the end of June to the beginning of September. That's the challenge for parents now. Another challenge, here's the thing, I'll ask you this. Would you know your car reg number? See, we're going to Galway tomorrow, and Niamh, who's travelling down with me, needed my car reg number because we've a, you know, a parking spot somewhere. Somebody needs to know it. And she just, you know, shouted across the office, "Ray, can I have your car reg number?" And I said, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. I know the first three numbers, and I know that it's D for Dublin. But after that, there might be a 2 in it, there might be a 4. Don't know. And I think that I'm not on my own not knowing my car reg number. If I have to do any of that, you know, the administration around your car, like tax or insurance, you're usually doing it at the computer and the car is parked out front. You just pull across the blind or the curtain and look out and get it, and then you type it in. That's it. But as to committing it to memory, no. So I'm wondering, am I on my own on that one? Listen, great chat there with Glenn and Joe and other Irish music legends, Aslan. They've just announced, Billy McGuinness has just announced that they're releasing The Fields of Athenry. They recorded it before the late Christy Dignam became ill. And Billy says, "Little did we know when we were in the studio recording an Aslan version of The Fields of Athenry that it would be our final time recording with Christy. As usual, he recorded an amazing vocal to the track, and like so many cover songs that the band have recorded over the years, Christy put his own unique stamp to it." The song is going to be officially released this day next week. Yeah, Thursday week. And it'll be available on Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes. We must get on to Billy and see if he'll come in and give us an exclusive premiere of the playing of Aslan's The Fields of Athenry. I'm really looking forward to hearing that. It's not available anywhere, no clips. I thought I'd be able to play a clip for you, but it's not available till next Thursday. But really looking forward to hearing that. And a great way of keeping the memory of the great Christy Dignam alive, The Fields of Athenry, which is a big sporting song, of course, The Fields of Athenry. And we had Shay Connolly in yesterday and Michael Larkin, and they're from Ringsend. And they were telling us about two songs, Ringsend Abbey and On Our Way Down Under. And Ringsend Abbey sounds like some historical song to do with some, you know, religious Abbey. It's not. It's about Abby Larkin, who's the youngest member of the Irish squad taking part in the FIFA Women's World Cup in Australia starting next Thursday. Is it next Thursday? Yeah. And anyway, Shay and his band, the Irish Pullovers, have written and recorded two songs, On Our Way Down Under and Ringsend Abbey. And he just wanted us to remind you that both songs are available to purchase now on iTunes. All proceeds going to the Peter McFerry Trust. A very worthy cause, and they were number one and number two on the iTunes charts when we were talking to Shay yesterday. Shay was telling us he's a big GAA fan, and he says it's a bit ironic that he's writing a song about football, the other code, but on GAA, James Crombie, we spoke to him, well, that's probably Mullingar, 2 weeks ago, yeah, and we've spoken to him on a number of occasions. He's a brilliant photographer, and he's in the news again today. He took a picture of Fionn McGivern, age 2, at the Kilkenny Clare game in Croke Park on Sunday. And it's a brilliant picture. I don't know if you've seen it because it's done the rounds on Twitter. Over 3 million people have looked at it. But you have everybody completely ensconced in the match. And it's two chunks of people, and then there's the steps up the middle. And there, three quarters way up the steps, is little Fionn in his Kilkenny kit, him too ensconced in the game with his hands behind his back like Dinny used to have in Glenroe. And it's just another brilliant study, another brilliant picture by James Crombie. The interesting thing is that Fionn and his family are actually from Antrim. It was little Fionn's first time in Croke Park. And Mr. McGivern, his dad, said he was always a fan. He, the dad, was always a fan of DJ Carey. There's no connection between them and Kilkenny, and that Little Fionn has a number of kits, and of course they just went down for the day out in Croke Park, and that's when the picture was taken, and of course Kilkenny won. And it's a great picture to have for the family album, and maybe, I'm saying maybe, I'm sure it's going to happen, it's going to be framed and put up on the mantelpiece in a position of prominence. Still on sport, Wimbledon is ongoing. Yeah, it's great to dip into it. There's a story about the Nike dress in the papers today. It looks like a bit of a doily, but it's very popular. We might come back to that at some stage in the future. The other thing that caught my eye was visually impaired fans are getting the chance using high-tech headsets to watch Wimbledon. So it's a Vodafone thing. They're trialing new 5G-powered Give Vision headsets on Centre Court and the number one court at Wimbledon this year. And what happens is you put, it's like those VR headsets that you put on, and then live footage is streamed from local TV cameras to the headsets, and then they can enhance the footage to suit the person's specific sight profile. So it's not one size fits all. So by bringing it closer to their eye to stimulate the photoreceptor cells in the retina, it means that they can see more, although they're visually impaired. And because they're there in the crowd, they get everything else. They get the smells, they get all those smells, they get the sounds, and then they can see it as well, which is amazing. So a brilliant use of technology. There's a great family video doing the rounds. It's a mum and three of her daughters, and the mum has booked a trip to Liverpool, you know, herself and the girls, for, I don't know if it's a girls' weekend or whatever. She booked a hotel room, and they didn't realise until they got there that it was a hotel room with 8 single beds, and it has a view of the main road. And when they get in and they realise where they're staying for the weekend, they just go into a fit of laughing.
Let's get a picture of the nice view.
I'm in.
So there's about 8 beds, all single beds, in one hotel room. And very, very funny. Reminds me, the early days of the Kilkenny Cat Laughs, everybody was opening up their house. I remember myself and a few lads went down to it, and it was a box room, and there were 3 single beds in it, and they were so close together you literally couldn't fall out of the bed. You know, there was so little room between each single bed, and it's a bit like that. And when they realise what's ahead of them, and they realise what the mum did, they just can't stop laughing. You booked it, man. You booked it. We were talking to Colman Nochter yesterday, and we didn't get around to talking about the new, is it SPHE? Isn't that it? Social? It's the new sex education curriculum for senior, as in 5th year and 6th year, 15 to 18 year olds. And there was talk about it in the papers yesterday. We didn't get around to talk about it. We will do it in the future. But I read in the papers today that parents fret more about talking to children about maths and science than sex education. So there you go. So don't ask me about your algebra and your trigonometry. I'll willingly talk to you about the birds and the bees and how things happen there. But I don't cosines and all that calculus. No. Isn't that interesting? I thought I found that interesting. Now, Ray, on not knowing your car, Reg, you're not alone. Having a breeze, is that person. Great. I have a photo of the back of my car with Reg saved in my phone. So that's what I have to dig out when asked for it. I'm going to do that. And we're talking today to Jenny McCarthy. And Jenny is a wedding photographer. She's a photographer, but she specialises in weddings, and she's brilliant. She's done thousands of weddings over the years, and as a result, she is very knowledgeable about how to go about planning a wedding. She has a new book out called The Wedding by Jenny McCarthy. How did it come up with that title? The Ultimate Guide to Your Stress-Free Day. I'm looking at it here for the first time. It's a very impressive publication. And Jenny's coming into us today. So if you have any questions or queries about weddings that you'd like to put to Jenny, she would be delighted to share her vast experience of weddings with you. So ray@rte.ie, ray@rte.ie. Also today, very excited to say that we have Haircut 100 frontman Nick Hayward. Yes, yeah, yeah, him. Coming in for a chat. Well, he's not coming in for a chat. He's coming into a studio in London and we're going to be chatting to him from here in Dublin. So just to whet your appetite, all you Haircut 100 fans, right back to the early 1981-82, was it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Loveless One, Haircut 100. And we'll be talking to their frontman, Nick Hayward. Word before the end of the show. I was just looking at their first performance on Top of the Pops. I think it was 1981. Nick looks about 12 years old and he looks very nervous. Rabbit in headlights came to mind. So I'll be talking to him about that and other things when we chat to him later on in the show. My husband knows the reg number of every car he's ever had, right? And mine, telephone numbers. He's the same. Some people do that sort of thing, don't they? I'd know selected phone numbers, you know, first girlfriend, that sort of thing. You'd probably remember those and the home number, but that's about it. I wouldn't know our home number now. Very few people have home numbers now. And we're becoming overly reliant on our phones, aren't we? That's everything is there. If we lose our phones, it's like losing your memory. Now, we're looking for two people to come on at 4 o'clock, after 4 o'clock, and take part in our whodunit quiz. Three questions each and a prize. And this week we say thank you very much to Dublin's One Hotel. It's a new stylish central hotel based on the North Circular Road. It's an Ainua Collection hotel, ideal for exploring Dublin city centre this summer. Your stay includes two tickets to soak up all the flavours of the Big Grill as well, which is happening in Herbert Park in August 17th to 20th. DublinOneHotel.com and BigGrillFestival.com for more information. Now, here's your qualifying question on this Thursday afternoon. Everyone's talking about Barbie. Yes, they are. But what's the name of her fashionable fella? Ben or Ken? So what's the name of Barbie's fella? Ben or Ken? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, photographer Jenny McCarthy says in her new book, The Wedding, that it's the ultimate guide to your stress-free day. And she's not wrong. From spreadsheets to sweetheart necklines, she gives you a comprehensive guide from the moment you get engaged right up to a minute-by-minute checklist on the morning of your wedding day. Jenny, good afternoon.
How are you, Ray?
I was saying you've taken photographs at thousands of weddings. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, I'd say easily. Sure, I'm doing it 20 years now.
20 years?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And I'm still not sick of it.
Yeah. And I suppose uniquely you were an observer. Because
yes.
That's your job, taking yeah. photographs. You observe things.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm a bit of a giver as well, Ray. So if I see anything happening on a wedding day that needs to be fixed, I'm in there. And
right.
They call me the other bridesmaid, you know. So there's just nothing I don't know about weddings at this stage.
And I suppose you can anticipate problems. You can
yes.
see things. Because on the day, of course, if you're the bride, the groom or whatever, the best man, the bridesmaid, you're, there's an emotional thing going on and you're sort of, you know, your head isn't right.
Yeah.
So you're there, cool, calm. Collected, yeah. And you can see, oh, that's not going to go right.
Yes.
You better tell them now. Yes,
yeah. Exactly.
So you're in a way perfectly positioned to write this book.
Well, you know, this book has been in my head for years, but I just never had any time to write it.
Mm.
So when we went into the last lockdown in the January, I thought, oh, here, I can't sit here looking at the walls. I'm writing this book and I'll have it done about 3 or 4 weeks because all the info is in my head.
Yeah.
And here we are 2.5 years later and it's only done now, you know.
Well it's a very impressive publication.
Aww.
So a lovely matte white, is that how you
yes.
describe it? Matte
yeah.
white cover. And then embossed in silver, The Wedding by Jenny McCarthy.
I was really fussy about the look of the book because I wanted people when they were opening the box, you know, when they've bought the book to feel like that it was a gift in itself, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and I wanted simplicity and elegance and I think I kind of nailed that.
Right. And as well as your advice, there's a sort of journal-like pages in it as well.
Yes.
Checklists.
Oh, yeah. Because there's so many checklists you need on a wedding day. Like the timing is the biggest tip that I could give. The timing on the morning of a wedding, Ray, if I was to give one tip for the day, it's be on bloody time, do you know? Don't be walking up the aisle a half an hour late, because they'll still ring the bell in the venue at the same time they said they were going to ring it at. And if you're a half an hour late walking up the aisle, that's half an hour gone off your day.
But is it not a bride's prerogative to
be late? Not for half an hour, 5 minutes. But like, honestly, because, yeah, it is her prerogative to be a little bit late.
Yeah.
But honestly, that half an hour has gone off your day.
It has a knock-on effect.
It does.
Yes.
You know, and your poor other half standing on the top of the aisle going, where is she? Like, yeah, half an hour is too late.
You see, I thought the half hour was built into the day.
No, it's not.
So that's your top advice.
Oh, well, it's one of my, you know, big tips for the morning. Yeah.
Here's the other thing, just, and this is a general point, that nobody knows what you've planned. So don't get too head up if something doesn't go according to plan. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. You're so right. I love it. Yeah, if some little issue goes wrong, it's only a little issue.
Yes,
you know, no one's going to know about it. So don't tell anyone and let it go, you know.
What are those little things that they put on the tables? Favours, is
favours.
It?
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah.
So if your favour isn't up to your, you know, nobody will know.
Or else don't use favours.
Yes,
do you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to have a favour.
And then... And like, we're going to do this in no particular order, but just seeing as we're on favours, you know, people who think they can make the favours themselves and probably do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one thing making a lovely little thing, or maybe two or five, but when you're making 120,
yes,
that's a different story.
And
completely.
Also, if you're making a favour, you need to be good at making it. Like, don't make a favour if it's awful looking, do you know?
Yeah.
So take that into consideration. And if you want favours that you can't make yourself, get someone to do it for you.
Outsource. And of course, but you know, money's is an object as well, is a consideration. So sometimes people just have to do it themselves.
Yes.
So you, according to this 12-month timeline, so you should be getting this book the morning after you get engaged. Yeah. would people normally put a year between the engagement
sometimes
and the wedding?
Sometimes two,
right? Right, okay.
You know, like I could get bookings 2 or 3 years in advance. So once they get engaged and they set their date, that's when they really start planning, you know. And what I would say is, when you get engaged and you decide when you want to get married, book the people and the places that you want. So if you want a particular venue, they can only take on one wedding a day in most cases. Book your ceremony and your photographer and your band. They're the four big things.
The pillars, if you
the
like.
The pillars, yes. And if you have a makeup artist that you absolutely want, book them, do you know?
Yeah.
Or a hair person. So the people that you really, really want, you need to book immediately.
Okay. The politics, there's loads of politics around weddings, isn't there?
I suppose. No.
Look, I've been doing this long enough and we've got enough emails into the show over the years.
Yes.
One of the big things, of course, is your you know, the guest list.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't invite everybody.
No, you can't. Right.
And I always see it as circles, you know. So you have your immediate circle of family.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you go out, you go into the next circle of friends.
Yes.
And then if you go into the work circle.
Yeah.
You know, like, because if you go into that circle, then everybody's aware that they're in that circle,
and
they probably should be invited.
And the thing is, then you've cousins and you've aunties and you've uncles and you've got that whole dynamic. So my advice is to decide what your budget is and who do you want in the room. Like, I would get asked regularly. I have people I don't want to ask, but parents are putting pressure on me to ask cousins or to ask. It's your wedding. So, you know.
What if parents are paying for it? I know that's not doesn't happen that much anymore. Maybe it does. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Does it?
Well, yes, it does sometimes,
but
not all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes. But most couples actually pay for their own weddings themselves now. Mm. I just don't feel that anybody should put any pressure on anyone to invite people they don't want there.
Okay.
If somebody makes you feel uncomfortable, you're getting married. I think it's one of the best days of your life. I had the best day. And Martin and I decided to just invite the people that we see all the time and that we love. And we wanted to sit at our top table was in the middle of the room. And Martin and I sat with our five children. And that was our top table. And we just wanted to, and it was a circular table. We just didn't want to have that whole kind of long top table.
Yeah.
And just enjoy. And that's what we did. And everyone in the room we loved.
Have you noticed over your 20 years of photographing weddings, that they've got less formal and people are putting a bigger stamp of their own personality on them.
Yes, but I also have noticed that couples, especially the women, you know, they want their wedding to be the best day ever. And so they like to sort of implement things during the day, like, you know, musicians at the drinks reception,
right,
or a magician at the drinks reception, or, you know, another supplier who's going to entertain the guests. You don't need to do that if the budget is against you.
Yeah.
Because when you're putting on a wedding, you're inviting people to your party, because that's what it is once the ceremony is over. And everyone is there having a few drinks and they'll entertain themselves. So you don't need to do lots of stuff if you don't have the budget.
There's huge pressure on people, though.
Yes.
Is there anything you can say here today, Jenny McCarthy,
yes,
that will sort of relieve some of that pressure,
yeah,
from people who are planning weddings?
Just organise a wedding that's going to suit the two of you and forget everybody else. At the end of the day, it's your wedding. It's nobody else's wedding. You know, all of these other people coming along are either married or going to get married in the future or whatever. And they've had their day. Have your own day that suits you.
And of course, what has happened, and it happened the year we got married, we're 10 years married this August, was that now you can get married anywhere.
Absolutely.
That was the first year, I think. It was, 2013.
Yes.
So I think at the beginning of the year, that year, we were going to have to go to a registry office and then get married a second time. And then the law changed that year.
Wasn't that brilliant?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because not everybody wants to get married in a church. And I'm going to be honest. Like, I come across, and they're priests, and some priests are lovely. Some priests are awful.
Yeah.
And they think they can speak to you whatever way they want because that's their church. And, you know, and I would be so respectful, and I've never photographed during the consecration, and I would always...
Oh, they speak to you?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, I can see their point of view, you know.
No, I can't.
No, you can't, right?
Because they have to do a job and they're marrying a couple.
Yeah.
And I'm so discreet, but just sometimes the way they speak to you, you know, I've been cursed at by priests.
By priests?
Yes.
Ah, you haven't. No, go no, way
Ray,
out of
no,
that, yes.
No, Ray, yeah. I have.
Yeah.
I remember doing a wedding in Kerry a few
now,
years ago.
Now be careful here, don't name.
No, I'm going to say it as it is, because some priests are lovely and some priests are not. And I genuinely think that it's about their personality. But I did this wedding in Kerry, and I won't name the priest. I can't even remember his name.
Right.
But when I went in, I heard his Dublin accent and I thought, oh, he's from Dublin.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought he was going to be so nice to me. He was so rude. He was so...
In their defence, because I've been at a lot of weddings in churches over the years, and they may have had a bad experience in the past.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's, you know...
I
but
know,
anyway,
you're sticking up for them.
No,
but
I mean,
my experience is some can be lovely and
some
can be
not.
Awful.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's the same with humanists and all sorts of everybody.
Yes.
So it's changed, and now I see that a lot of people, and nearly half, I think, are getting married outside of churches. So there's a lot of change, and I suppose people aren't strictly adhering to the traditions of weddings,
exactly,
which is great.
Yeah, because you can have spiritual weddings and you can have humanist weddings
as well. Yeah.
But it's all legal, you know.
Yeah, it is all legal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the other political issue is the number of women involved. So you have the bridesmaid, and then sometimes you have this huge wedding party.
Yes.
So you have a number, you have a bridesmaid, and then there's what are the official names?
Well, so you can have as many bridesmaids as you want.
Yes.
You can have a maid of honour. You can have, like, I'm doing a wedding now on Monday, and there's like a massive bridal party. So I have five bridesmaids and I have five groomsmen, and I've got the bride and groom, and I've got some, you know, flower girls and page boys.
Right.
That's a massive wedding party, you know. So you've got to kind of get your thinking cap on when it comes to photographing them, because you can't put them in a big line, because if you want to put that photograph into a wedding album, it's too long.
And so is that to satisfy everybody, do you think? Or,
do you know,
is that politics, or
it's sometimes difficult when you've a few drinks on you and you're after getting engaged and you've all your pals around and you're like, oh, you're going to be my bridesmaid, and so are you, and then all of a sudden you have five, and then sometimes you might have two sisters and three best friends. So I would just say, you know, ask who you want to ask. You don't have to ask six people. Do you know?
Yeah. So what's the biggest wedding party you've ever photographed?
Six groomsmen and six bridesmaids, and then there were like about four or five little flower girls. And the thing is, with, and I always say this about children at weddings, Ray, I adore children. When I'm not photographing weddings, I'm photographing children in my studio. However, on a wedding day, you can't guarantee that they're going to behave for the photographs because they're little ones, you know.
Okay, and what is, what again, advice, because the book is all about advice.
Yes.
Advice on inviting children to a wedding.
Yeah, so here's the thing. If you're getting married in a church, or if you're getting married in a ceremony room in a hotel, and you have children aged two or three, I mean, they don't know to be quiet during a ceremony. And sometimes they're nieces and nephews of the bride and groom. So if your brother is there with his children, he wants to be there at the ceremony. Mm. And sometimes it's a little bit difficult because they won't, I'm not saying discipline them, because they shouldn't really be disciplined because they don't know how to be, they're only two. But they want to run up and down the aisle.
Yes. See, there's a problem then. There's the childcare problem, because usually we go to members of our extended family for childcare.
Yes.
But all of them are guests
there
at the wedding.
So
yes.
hire somebody.
Hire somebody.
There are so
right.
many companies out there that you can hire, Ray.
Right.
And they're amazing at what they do. So just take that stress out of it for yourself. That's what I would recommend.
Okay. Is there any bit of advice just from a photographer's point of view? I know timing is hugely important.
Yes.
Anything else?
Yes. So, well, I suppose photographs are everything, aren't they? I would always say to a bride on her wedding day, I know you've gone out and bought a fabulous pair of Jimmy Choos, but make sure you bring something to wear that are the same height as your Jimmy Choos, that are not uncomfortable, because you're going to be in these shoes for 16, 18 hours. You
know? And you have to do a lot of sort of directing, don't you?
Yeah.
You get there, you get there. So you need to probably know the politics of the family as well, because if Uncle Johnny doesn't get on with Auntie Mary, you need to know that they shouldn't be alongside each other in a photograph.
Exactly. Or parents could be separated or divorced and not speaking to each other. I've had so much of that in the past, right? But I need to know, and I would say absolutely to any couples out there, don't be afraid to say that to your photographer, because they absolutely need to know.
Okay, let's see what they're saying here about weddings. At a recent wedding, the place names had wild seeds embedded in the paper so they could be planted. That's a
nice
idea.
Such a lovely idea.
Does Jenny still enjoy going to weddings as a guest, given that she's it's like a busman's holiday, isn't it? That's
no,
a good question.
I don't.
You don't, right? Okay. Don't invite me to your wedding, says Jenny. At our wedding, my wife tried to blow out a candle, forgetting that she was wearing a veil, which briefly caught fire. Could have been a disaster. And I hope your guest advises couples getting married to forgo the 2-day celebration. One party. Yes.
Yes.
How are you
that
on that
can be
now?
Expensive. So when you've got like a bunch of friends who are all getting married at the same time, can you imagine, Ray, like having 10 weddings to go to during the year? And you have to go to them because they're your friends. But then when it goes into a 2-day thing, it can be expensive, you know? So I think of your budget, think of everybody else's budget, and ask them what they think, you know? Because it is expensive, do you know?
Yeah, and then like people are going to be hungover. They'd really want to be hanging around and facing the people that might have made a show themselves in front of the night before. You have to consider all these things. You have to think it through. You do have to think it through.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you would advise against, do you think?
I would just say have a think about it. Mm. Have a think about how many other weddings are on during that year. Yeah. Think of people's budgets.
Speaking of budgets, because again, over the years, the email correspondence from people who got invited to weddings, like it is costly.
Oh, it's very costly.
It is costly.
Yeah.
So what is the typical gift now?
Okay, so you have to cover your meal, really. Like, you know, so you cover the meal.
So pay for the meal in your gift.
You kind of have to. Like, I mean,
it's transactional.
You kind of have to, and then a little bit more.
Right. Mm-hmm. So a couple would give what?
Well, say the meal is 100 quid. You give 100 quid each and then a little bit more. So
250.
So 250 per couple. Yeah.
And are the, you remember the gift lists that were very common in the...
Yeah.
They're gone.
Do you know who wants like...
A toaster?
No thanks. I really don't see gift lists anymore. Right. You know?
And is it usually all cash now?
It's money and cards. That's what
money
they want.
Money and cards, yes.
Yeah, they want the money,
so,
right?
So, and I don't mean to be cold and callous, but it is transactional, isn't it? It's like we invite these people, they pay for our wedding, everybody has a good day.
It is.
That's right, okay.
Yeah, it's money and cards.
I hate weddings. I dread being asked to one. Now there are 3 days of misery. Don't get me started on kids at weddings. No place for them.
Oh my God. Are you happy, whoever you are? Are you married?
No, I'm not saying I agree with them every day, but some days I would agree with them.
I know. Look, some people just don't like going to weddings. Yeah. They've been to so many over the years and they probably find that they're all the same. So, yeah, each to their own.
We had 20 children at our wedding from 10 weeks old to teenagers. Our friends would not have been able to come if the children weren't there. I specifically told them not to worry about noise, especially the babies.
Yeah. Okay, you can't.
We had children at ours as well. And
yes.
They sort of added to it, I thought.
Yeah, but absolutely.
It's whatever. And it is, remember, it's your day. So yes. Whatever makes you feel happy and comfortable.
Look, I would always say each to their own. Yeah. Organise a day that pleases you.
Now, how are you? You look amazingly healthy.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah. So you've had your, like, how many operations have you had?
I had a brain tumour 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And I had to have that removed.
Benign?
It was benign. But still, you know, it was a brain tumour. Yes, it was an awful thing to have to go through. And unfortunately, then it grew back and I had to have it removed again last year. So, you know, my surgeon had said to me when it came, the same one came back, so it wasn't even a different one. And he had said to me, normally, if they don't come back in the first 5 years, you're fairly okay. So it was quite unusual that it grew back, you know. So I was quite sick, actually, after.
How are you now? You're
I'm good now. You know, I'm really good now. I was really sick last year after I had the surgery.
Yeah, physically and I'd say mentally as well, right? There's a play, like, you know, I'd imagine it, like, I know if it was me, it would play on my mind.
Yes.
I would think about it every day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think, you know, when I was diagnosed, I was more worried about Martin than I was about myself because I remember when it happened the first time, he was just like in bits and he worried so much. I remember a friend of mine calling up to the house one of the mornings and I was at work at the time, 12 years ago. And she said it took him a couple of minutes to answer the door and she knew he was in there and he came to the door and he was not good. He was really upset, you know. So I was more afraid sort of telling him this time than I was facing myself.
You're such a lovely couple, and I'm not, you know, but you are. You're such a lovely. You can see it.
Thanks,
you can see,
Ray.
And the way you talk about him, the way he talks about you, it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, you know, it is. It is.
Yeah. So I suppose I wasn't afraid. I just thought I need to go in and get this out, and I'm going back to work in 6 weeks, and that's the way I sort of.
And are you one of these people who Google stuff, or do you?
No, I mean, Martin wouldn't ever Google anything. Would always say, "Don't Google anything," and Dr. Google he calls it. Yeah. I mean, I'd look up stuff. I'd look up specific sites if I needed to, but I wouldn't go Googling something. Mm. And you know, I would have taken the diagnosis from my surgeon, and he told me I was going to be fine. Now, I do sometimes wonder, would it ever come back? So that comes into my mind sometimes. And that scares the bejesus out of me.
Of course it does.
Because it was on my speech, memory and language area. It was on my frontal lobe. So I'd like, God, thank God I have hair, Ray, because my skull is in bits. Like I have big holes in my head, you know, like really big.
Have you got plates
holes.
Or no?
No, just from kind of where he removed it. He would have had to cut open my my skull and take the tumour out, you know. Yeah.
So if it comes back, it's going to affect
It would possibly affect my speech the next time. So please God, there won't be a next time, touch wood, you know. So I do wonder about that sometimes, but then I go, no, I'm fine right now. And I feel good now.
Yeah.
I feel great.
Yeah. And this is brilliant. And it's a distraction, I suppose, as well. It's great. Just one last question about it, because what's your man's name? His first name, Marsh. I've read a couple of his books. He's a neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
Right. And the thing that fascinated me most about it was that with some neurosurgery, that the person is still awake.
Yes. Well, you see, Kieran Bulger was the man who took my tumour out. He woke me up during surgery and spoke to me. And that's how and I said to him, are you actually joking? You're going to wake me up? Am I going to know my wake? Get lost. Because I'm so squeamish, right? I was like, get lost. He said, no, you will know you're awake. But when you actually wake up from surgery, you won't remember. And I was like, oh, thank God.
And the reason they know the reason they do it.
Yes.
Because they need to know that the function is still there.
So I reckon that's why he said that to me about my speech. If, touch wood, it was ever to happen the next time, that he was actually on my speech area.
Right.
You know, so if it were to come back, it would affect my speech. So please God.
Right.
That doesn't happen.
Henry Marsh is the name. I can't recommend his books to you because it's too close. But I can recommend your books. See the way I did that. See the way I did that.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, The Wedding by Jenny McCarthy, and it's a beautiful book, and it covers all iterations of weddings, you know, from church weddings to humanist weddings to same-sex weddings. All, everything's in there.
Down to mother of the bride and mother of the groom. Don't forget mother of the groom.
Everything's in there. The ultimate guide to your stress-free day. Jenny, great to see you, and say hello to Martin for us.
I will. Okay, thank you so much, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Haircut 100. Ah, yeah. Big hits in the early 80s. Their frontman, Nick Hayward, is on the line, and they're coming to Vicar Street in Dublin in October. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Ray.
Happy wedding anniversary. There's a coincidence.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I loved your chat with Jenny. That was fascinating.
Yeah. So how many years married are you? Can you tell us?
A couple of years. We got married during COVID because we were stuck abroad. So we found this local place called Plant City.
Right.
And it was like a building by a bridge. And we went inside and got married by this lovely lady called Michelle, who was so sweet. She reminded me of a mole. And then we went outside and we went across the road to Starbucks and had the wedding reception, and Sarah had a cake pop and I had a flapjack.
So romantic. So romantic. Yeah. Listen, Nick Hayward, it's a real pleasure to talk to you because, you know, I was buying your records in the early 80s. I remember introducing people to this song. That was the first single, wasn't it, from Pelican West, was it?
Yeah, that was the first one out of the flower basket.
Yeah. And was that your first appearance on Top of the Pops?
It was, yeah, terrifying. For all of us, we were like, oh my God, is this really happening?
Well, you're only 12, so I can imagine you were very afraid.
Yeah, we all looked about 12.
You did, yeah.
Well, we're only 20, I think. Yeah. 20, yeah.
No, but you did look particularly young now. Come on, looking back, you did look, I'd say 16, you would have got away with being a 16-year-old.
Yeah, I used to get stopped in pubs and like that. And, you know, especially if I wore dungarees.
Yeah.
It was, not good. But coming back from America, a long tour out then, I was trying to impress my mates back in Beckenham and took them all out for a drink and wouldn't get served.
and on the dungarees, how would you describe your sartorial approach back in the early 80s? What was your look?
It was anything. It was just like, what hasn't been worn yet? You know, has there been any? I mean, I was inspired when I saw Fergal Sharkey with an anorak on Top of the Pops.
Yeah,
I'm sou that had a bit of an influence with me wearing a sou'wester, a yellow fisherman's sort of like sou'wester on. Yeah, because it was just polo gear, anything that hadn't been done yet. That's what it was. It was just not conforming. It's just anything new. What hasn't been done before?
You wore an iron jumper as well, long before Taylor Swift was wearing iron jumpers.
Yeah, well, it was freezing, I think, when we first... I think it was like the end of the 1981.
So it was October
getting
1981.
Getting close to Christmas.
Yeah.
And it was freezing at Top of the Pops as well, absolutely freezing.
So what... I know you were... Were you genuinely scared, though?
Genuinely cold, genuinely terrified.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody said to me, when that little orange light goes on, there's like 20 million people. Don't worry. You know, he probably said it to everyone, but I just like thought, yee. And the camera kind of came in from above and I was like looking up and thought, oh, wow. And all I could think about was my buck teeth. I had a huge gap in my teeth at that time. And I was just like, 'cause I never thought I'd ever go on telly, ever. And if I did, I'd be the guitarist standing to one side. I was like the songwriting bloke, not the front man.
Right.
But here I was, and I thought, oh, shit, I'm on telly. Oh, dear. I'm on telly. And it's happened. I didn't really want to be David Bowie.
but like, you know, great songs, great singer, great producer. Like, it was just a great pop package, wasn't it?
Well, it was, you know, it was Les Graham and I's dream, you know, as a band. We'd had so many rehearsals, you know, setting up, packing up, driving home, rehearsing again the next day, going out the weekend, living and breathing the band, living together in one room together above a flower shop, just with that dream of actually being, you know, that's why we couldn't believe it actually happened, but it was our dream. So we'd put in all the work beforehand. You know, we'd gone through punk, We've gone through new wave, mod, ska, you know, and then new romantic happened, and we were just like, and then suddenly there was this kind of other little cultural wave coming over the horizon, and we're on it. It's like, oh, this is us. Oh, right, okay, this is our bus. Jump on.
Yeah, because it was. How would you describe it? It was definitely pop. There was a bit of maybe jazz influence, was there? Definitely a new romantic feel to it as well, but not so much as Spandau Ballet. So how?
We went for Bob Sargent for our producer, who we loved the beat and
their
records, because they were just so clear. And I feel like that clear and crispy sort of timeless feel that the beat had. And I think, you know, even now people are saying, you know, Haircut 100 sounds crispy. It doesn't sound like the 80s.
It's mad because that's the exact conversation we had upstairs, Nick Hayward.
Ah,
that they're timeless. They've stood the test of time. We play a bit of Fantastic Day. Sort of seemed a little bit more mature than you'd expect from a 20-year-old song.
Yeah, well, you know, we had such eclectic tastes, you know, the influences. I mean, I've been to see Oscar Peterson,
Ray
Charles,
Oscar
and
Peterson.
Count Basie at One Bill. Yeah, that was like my first gig, and Mark was into Latin American percussion, and you know, Les was into Hendrix, and Graham was into The Clash, and there was Earth, Wind & Fire and Tower Power, and it all came together. And when we got Blair, you know, he was from Memphis. You know, he drummed with all the Memphis Stax records and things. So when he came in, what you're hearing there is the band, like, really, we were at our height there. Like, in we were kind of like, it was just, we couldn't believe that we sounded this way. And when Blair joined, it was like, I think we're world class. We actually sound really, really good. It's like, we're the tightest band in London. What is this? We just kept getting tighter and then putting brass on it. And before you know it, it was like we got a reputation as a bit of a formidable live band. And we just played and played, and it was all about the music, and everything just got forgotten. And we were just, it's pure energy on stage. I mean, I every gig I say, I'm not going to do that energy. I'm not going to do Haircut energy. Nope. I pace myself. And then the gig starts happening, and then those songs start, they get plugged in. And before you know it, it's like, bang, 100%. Flat out, exhausted afterwards,
and that's exhaustion is the thing that happened to you. And people, I suppose, you know, when you hear you talking, and you left nothing, you know, it was always 110%. So, and you probably weren't prepared for it in a way. Who would be prepared for it? Going on Top of the Pops and having all those top 10 singles and touring the world and all that. So it took its toll on you.
Yeah, I didn't sleep. I didn't sleep for the year. Just went from one gig to another. I was still sweating when I went to the next gig. It was just, there was no time to wash any clothes or anything. It was just kind of, as I was living out of a suitcase I was always doing interviews we were pretty tired. I mean, I think it would, if somebody just, and we didn't have a manager, and so now we have for the first time ever, you know. And there's lots of first time evers, you know, like playing in Dublin, first time ever.
Yes, we'll come to that. But how did you not have a manager?
Well, we had one initially, and then he kind of he wasn't great.
Right.
So he left, but he was great at keeping it together, even though. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, I won't go there.
And then all this exhaustion, and then what happened? Did you start sort of snipping at each other, and you fell out, or what happened?
Just lack of communication.
Right.
That's it, purely. I mean, we look back and laugh now, you know, because all that stuff just becomes humour now.
Yes, and you're back together, and you're coming to Dublin for the first time, because you were so mad in that first, in the early 80s, you never got a chance to come to Dublin.
No.
I get a sense from looking at interviews and reading interviews with you that all of you are enjoying it now and appreciating it more than you did back then.
Exactly, because, I mean, you know, we have put in the time. I mean, Les Graham and I have a really strong foundation, having lived together for for so long as well, and lived and breathed the band, and it was our dream around the coffee table, and, you know, coming up, taking the name to the Three Tons in Beckenham and trying out with our mates and, you know, getting a strong reaction, that's the band name, and then taking it around London and playing. And, you know, it was like, so we just plug into that as soon as we get together. We cannot speak for years and then just... Yeah. Call each other up. And you know what it's old.
Yeah, well, that's
old friends.
Friends. Isn't that the measure?
Yeah.
That's how people describe friendship. It's as if you never were apart.
I mean, years can go by, and it's just like real friends just are always there.
Now, you brought up the name there. Go on, Haircut 100.
Yeah, well, it got... it was just one of the many names that we're trying out on our mates in the pub, and they just said, why? And I think that was... That kind of reaction worked because I thought, why? And I'd seen this picture of Paul McCartney with a question mark, and I liked surreal art pop at the time. I was fascinated with it. I was really into XTC and Talking Heads.
Mm.
And that reaction of why, and it was a bit like it crept into the songs, like why, oh, why, Lemon Fire Brigade, why? And people have been saying, why did you sing Lemon Fire Brigade? What's a Lemon Fire Brigade? Why do you want to go down to the lake you fear? You know, where does it go from here? You know, why is it?
So what's the exact lyric? I'm going to play a bit of that now. You give me the exact lyric. Give love some
soul. If I may. Here it comes.
Yeah.
Where does it go from here?
Right. Where does it go
from here? Is it down to the lake I fear?
Is it down to the lake I fear? Right.
Yes. I was terrified of the lake. What's going on down there? There's things down there. There's stuff going on. It's the subconscious. Don't get me down there. I'm terrified.
I've been singing that wrongly for 40 years. So thanks for putting me straight on that.
What were you singing?
Down to the lake, I was making up a word, kafir or something like that. Like, you know, kafir.
I've been singing Fantastic Day when it should be Fantastic Ray.
There you go. What a charmer. What a charmer. What a brilliant thing to be able to do again with your mates 40 years on, Nick.
Yeah, it is. It's... I mean, I did some interviews this morning with Les, bass player, extraordinaire. And, you know, it's so funny because we're doing them and you think, boy, we did these when we were teenagers. And we dreamt of doing this.
Now, you weren't great at them. I watched a couple.
Useless. Absolutely useless.
I watched you on the tube with the late Paulie Yates and Claire Grogan.
Yeah,
I watched that one. And I watched, there was Now on 2 or something like that. It was a BBC 2 children's programme or something like that. That was when you were in your solo days. And that was a bit low energy as well. But no, you've obviously...
I was nervous. I was terrified. I couldn't speak properly.
I understand that completely
That's why I wrote lyrics, because, you know, they were nonsense. It was like anything that came out of my mouth was nonsense.
You see,
How was I supposed to do interviews?
Yeah, we assume that people like you are good talkers, and that's not the case. The reason you get into it is because you want to write music and you want to sing and all that. You don't necessarily want to give interviews. But thank you so much.
Have you heard a footballer interviewed?
There you go. That's it. Yeah, you rest your case. Nick, great
talk. They communicate through their feet.
Yes. So, Haircut 100 back together, performing in Dublin's Vicar Street in October. And it's the first time in Dublin, and it's their 40th anniversary tour. Nick, lovely talking to you. And if things work out, you might come in and maybe sing live for us. I don't know. When you're here.
I'd love to, right?
Okay, Nick.
Love to.
Good luck. See you. Bye. Bye. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Garamaga Khan, thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Brendan says, a gang of us are going to Haircut 100 in Vicar Street. Never thought we'd see the day. We wonder if any of Nick's fabulous solo career songs will be included on the day. The 12-inch version of Gathering Sticks on Sunday is the perfect pop song and the best 12-inch single ever. But whether they do it or not, we'll still love Love Plus One. Take care, Brendan. There's a man who knows his pop. Early B-sides, Brendan. On the car, Reg parked the car at Dublin Airport and flew to Brussels. We then realised we had not paid the toll fee in the airport. When we went to pay online, we could not remember the Reg. We had to phone the garage to get the Reg number, says Geraldine. And on beds in hotels. We got married back in 1976. We had no booking for a honeymoon. We just arrived at the hotel for the first night and booked a room. We were very surprised. It had about 10 beds in it, Ray. We still talk about it today. We were so naive, but still together. And on wedding invitations, Noel says, when I get an invitation to a wedding, it's like a summons to court. I don't know if Noel has a Dublin accent or not. I just put that on. Weddings are now 2 days with a weekend for hen stags. It's a bill in the post to be invited to a wedding to somebody else. We're in our 60s now and still loads of invitations arriving. We now refer to them as a wedding invoice. Now, lads, the thing about it is you can't pull up the ladder behind you. Like, you had your big day. You know, you had your big day. And now young people, or not so young people, want their big day. So you have to let them have it. Now, wedding celebrant. I'm an interfaith celebrant. A couple of observations over the years. When a couple find a venue, they need to have a discussion about the kind of ceremony they would like. For example, a couple will say to me, we're not religious. That's why we came to you in the first place. Most couples like an element of spirituality in the ceremony. A remembrance of the ancestors, a ceremony that represents who they are as individuals and what they will become as a married couple. I can tell you the beautiful tapestries that emerge as we weave in family, friends, readings, rituals and music. My treasured thanks from happy couples make this job as celebrant so rich. And finally, something else. Some people are unsure how to behave in a hotel outdoor setting. It is my job to ensure that something very special and legal is to take place. So the respect is very necessary. The party starts after the wedding ceremony. Ooh, that sounds teacher-like there. So there you go. There are texts from the first hour. Now, we've two people standing by to take part in our Who Done It quiz. And there's a prize, which is a two-night stay for two people in Dublin's One Hotel. It's an Ainua Collection hotel. It's on the North Circular Road. And it's perfect, ideal for exploring Dublin city centre this summer. So breakfast each morning and dinner in the hotel's botanical restaurant on one evening. And on top of that, it's a good prize, on top of that you get tickets for the Big Grill, which is happening in Herbert Park in Dublin, Thursday 17th to Sunday 20th of August. Over 60 chefs, restaurants and barbecue experts from all over the world coming together to celebrate the pure magic of cooking over live fire, or barbecuing as we call it. Dublin1hotel.com, biggrillfestival.com for information. Hello, Deirdre Fitzpatrick in Kilkenny.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're home for the summer.
I am. I just arrived home yesterday morning.
Where were you?
I was in Dubai. So I've been living there the last 4 years, teaching there. But I come home every Christmas and summer to Ireland.
And how long do you stay when you're home for the summer?
So I'm staying until around the 22nd of August, so just before we go back to school.
Nice. And how do you occupy your time when you're home?
So sometimes I go travelling around Ireland and spending time with family and friends. So that's what I came home for, yes.
And is there a long-term plan or just doing what you're doing for the foreseeable future?
I keep saying one more year, and that's what a lot of people kind of say when they move there. We'll see one more year, but I think one more year. Yeah.
Is it a case, this is sort of a slightly personal question, but is it a case like it used to be in the 80s? For example, my sister and her now husband went over to Boston for 5 years and they saved and saved and saved and came back and they had a good healthy deposit for a house. Is that part of it or not? No.
Yes, it is. Well, I suppose I went before COVID. I went in August 2019 and that was a 1 year plan. Just I hadn't gone traveling or anything like that. And I said I would go. And then COVID happened. And then I said one more year. That's where I am now.
Right. OK.
Yeah.
You're up against Deborah Carolyn from Dunnacarney in Meath. How are you doing, Deborah?
Hi, Ray. I'm grand. Thank you.
Good. You're on maternity leave.
I am, yeah. I have my 5-week-old in my arms here, just trying to keep her quiet.
Oh, 5-year-old. Oh, that smell. Oh, that lovely smell.
That lovely cry.
That lovely cry, yeah. But you can't give it back, obviously, but, you know, her back. So,
exactly.
Is it Evelyn? Evelyn.
Evelyn, yes.
Yes.
Unusual, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Where, go on. Where did it come from?
It means kind of like a gifted child or a longed for child. So that's why we picked her name. Yeah. So she's very special.
Yeah.
But she's the youngest of three. Yeah.
Yeah. So Oisín and Shane are the older brothers.
That's right. Yeah. They're bribed with sweets currently.
They're which?
bribed with sweets.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask. How are they dealing with the new arrival?
Oh, they're fine. Yes, they're just business as usual, keeping me busy and summer camps and
yeah.
And the rest, yeah. It's a busy time being out of school.
It is, keeping them occupied. And Oisín, was that warrior camp? Sounds very exciting.
That's right. Oh, it's very exciting. It's the best thing ever, apparently, yes. And it's the most muckiest camp you'll ever come across. But it's very, very good, by all accounts.
What does he do there?
I think they just do sort of army battles and build bases and forts and they have to compete against other kids. And it just sounds very... mucky and great fun for little boys and girls, yeah. So it's 10 out of 10 is what I've been told.
10 out of 10, right? Right.
From 10 out of 10, yeah. So it's a winner.
that's good, yeah. And of course, and he's probably nicely tired of an evening then, is he, at the end of it all?
He is, exactly, yes. Yeah. Just chilled out on the couch now after he had a good shower.
Yeah, and then you're going to the beach.
Might go to the beach this evening, which is nice, just to tire him out even more. They like to get a swim in the evening, so...
That's nice.
Yeah, I think it's just a tactic on our part just to get them even to bed.
Even more tired.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're up at Bettystown. We were at Laytown. We did the show from Laytown there recently, which was lovely.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we're going to see there.
Where
yeah.
We go.
Yeah, that's where we go. They're sort of very close, aren't they? Bettystown, Laytown.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
They all tie into each other. Yeah.
Okay, now it's Deirdre versus Deborah. So three questions each. I give you the category, then I ask if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you decide not to go for a clue and get it right, you get 2 points. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both, Deirdre and Deborah. Here we go.
Great, thank you. Best of luck.
Okay, Deirdre, music is our first category. Would you like a clue or not?
Okay, thank you.
You're breaking up there. Say again.
No,
I can't hear you.
Wait.
Go on, try again.
No, I don't want a clue. No,
you don't
clue.
Want a clue. Yeah, whatever you did there, yeah. Keep doing it because that's you're
okay.
There you are. We have you there.
Okay, so, I'm outside.
Oh, great. Well, stay there. Don't move. Here's your music. We're looking for the name of who's singing this for 2 points. Here we go. Take it like a man, baby. Who's that?
M People.
It is. Well done. Moving on up. Heather Small.
Yes.
You get 2 points for that. Well done. M People.
Thank you.
Deborah, music for you too.
Okay.
Do you want a clue or not?
No.
No. Okay. For two, who is this? That?
Is it Seal?
It is! Great song, great voice. Yeah, isn't it? Kiss from a Rose. It was featured on a Batman soundtrack. 2 points. Good start from both Deirdre and Deborah. Back to you, Deirdre. Second question on cartoon characters. Cartoon characters. What do you think? Will you go for a clue or not?
No clue.
No clue. Okay, no clue. So we're looking for the cartoon character's name for 2 points. Who is this?
Hey, Spinach. You have to eat it to get health, strength, and vitality. Is that so? Well, just look here and I'll explain to you how Spinach helped in this picture, the Anvil Chorus Coil. And that's what Spinach did for me when that big swab. Huh?
Who's that?
Oh, he's married to Olive Oil.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Go on. No.
Oh, muscles.
Yeah.
Oh, no, gone.
His muscles.
Popeye.
No, they're saying it's too late. They're saying it's too late.
Oh, Popeye. He's saying a sailor man.
Yeah, they're saying it's too late, Deirdre. I don't know.
Oh,
yeah, no. No, it's Popeye. Grace. You can blame Grace. I'll give you your address later on. No, sorry about that because there is the timer there. It's amazing the way the brain works, isn't it? Olive oil, muscles, spinach, and then eventually Popeye. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Deborah, an opportunity for you to get in and score as cartoon characters. Do you want a clue or not?
No.
No clue. Okay, so for 2 points, okay, which cartoon character is this?
I have had it, boo-boo. I'm going to bust out of here. Every day is the same old thing. See what I mean, boo-boo? I am going to get out of this park. I will use strategy, boo-boo. Watch this. You'll see. I got to prove I'm smarter than the average ranger.
Who's that?
No clue.
No clue.
No.
No. Yeah, he's smarter than the average bear. His sidekick in Jellystone was Boo Boo, and his name, Yogi Bear. Yogi Bear. Okay. Yeah. Did you know that one, Deirdre?
I did.
Oh, I did. Yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's two all. It's even, right? Down to the final category, which is Irish rock stars. Irish rock stars. And they're speaking here, just to let you know. They're speaking, not singing. Now, do you want a clue or not? So just to fill you in on the maths of this, you're on two. If you go without a clue and get it right, you're on four. Puts Deborah under pressure. She has to go without a clue as well. If you go with a clue and get it right, you're on three, but Deborah can go without a clue, get it right, and she can be today's winner. So there you go. That should help you decide.
I'm going to go no clue, Ray.
Without a clue. Okay.
Without a clue.
Good luck with this. For 2 points, can you name this Irish rock star?
I have Sarah, which was a song that I had a hit with. And I have a new daughter now called Kathleen. But you know that, like, when you hear Saoirse or Tara, or it sounds pretentious. And I was looking for a good Irish name. I thought Mary was a bit too over the top, so I thought Kathleen would be nice if you spelt it with a C.
Say again?
Phil
Lynott. Phil Lynott, yes, Phil Lynott. That's it. That's 2 points. There, he's talking to Gay Byrne there on the Late Late Show, and of course he recorded Sarah. He also recorded another song, Kathleen, as well, dedicated to his daughters mentioned in that clip. So you're on four. You can't do any more, Deirdre.
Okay.
Deborah, you're under a little bit of pressure now. It's Irish rock stars. If you go first, you're going to go without a clue, I presume.
That's right.
Yeah, and if you get it right, it takes us to a tiebreak situation. If you don't, Deirdre is today's winner. Good luck with this. Can you name this Irish rock star for 2 points?
Yeah, I remember coming up to Dublin, doing our first gig, and like four people turned up. They was there, "Do you have to let it linger?" singing away, and it was like four people, and they were more interested in their pints than me. And I was like, it was really quite a nice thing when we went to America, and it was so big there, and then it ended up selling 6 or 7 million copies of our first album. So, you know, it was nice, like, you know.
Who's that?
The Cranberries.
I need the name of the singer.
I know.
What?
I don't know.
You
can't
don't know?
Her name.
No.
I can't think of her name.
No. There you go.
No.
It is. It's the lead singer of the Cranberries, but we needed Dolores O'Riordan. We needed Dolores O'Riordan.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Now you know. Now you know. Okay.
Yeah, of course.
Deborah, we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup. Lovely talking to you, and enjoy your maternity leave with little Evelyn. And welcome to the world, great. Evelyn. See you, Deborah.
Thank you.
Bye now. Bye.
Thank you, bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Deirdre.
Yes,
it was touch and go there, but you won in the end, and so you and a person of your choice, you can do this before you go back to Dubai, two nights in Dublin One Hotel on the North Circular Road, and tickets to the Big Grill in Harbour Park in the middle of August. Well done, Deirdre.
Thank you.
Good luck. See you. Bye. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Just a reminder, we're live from our Galway studio tomorrow. We're down there because the Galway Film Fla's on, and I'm really looking forward to interviewing Matthew Modine. Stranger Things, Birdie, new movie called The Martini Shot. Liam Cunningham is coming into us as well, and we've music and cheese and loads more. So that's from 3 o'clock tomorrow, live from our Galway studio. Yes, yes, yes.
We used to be giants. When did we stop?
Dermot Kennedy, Giants on RT Radio 1. Now, it was announced this morning that Cork-based poet Molly Toomey will receive the 2023 Ireland Chair of Poetry Bursary. The bursary is awarded to a poet of promise and enables the recipient, that being Molly, to reside for a period of 4 weeks at the Tyrone Guthrie Centre. Ahead of her appearance at the West Cork Literary Festival tonight, Molly is on the line. Hello, Molly.
Hi, how's it going?
Congratulations.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I'm delighted. It's an honour to receive the bursary and to get to spend time in the Tyrone Guthrie Centre.
Yeah. Will you just explain for our listeners and to me, you know, what this means and why you got it?
So I suppose this, I was nominated by the trustees of the board and the chair of poetry in Ireland, which is Paul Muldoon at the moment, which is just really amazing. It's a real honour to be given it. And I suppose it's in recognition of the work that I've done as a poet so far. And it's a real kind of giving me a sense of encouragement to keep going, to not give up anyway.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're from Lismore in Waterford.
Yeah, I am. I was raised in Lismore, living in Cork City now. And I went to college in NUI Galway originally in 2014 to study arts with creative writing. And when I was there, I fell in love with poetry. And 2 years into my degree, unfortunately, I struggled a lot with my mental health. So I had an eating disorder and I came out and got treatment. And then I transferred into UCC. Where I continued on at my studies, and I went on and did a master's in creative writing, and then my first book came out not last May but the May before. It's called Raised Among Vultures.
And does poetry help you, I suppose, understand, cope with your mental health issues?
Yeah, I suppose originally that's probably why I was so drawn to it. I suppose I was quite kind of choked. I didn't really know how to express myself. I didn't have the words really, and I suppose I didn't have the words in an ordinary conversation. I didn't know how to ask for help. I didn't know how to describe what was going on for me. But then the page, you know, it's easier. It's easier to kind of dig a bit deeper and to really think about stuff and let yourself be honest. And then eventually my relationship with poetry kind of evolved into me using it more as a craft, than a way to kind of purge all my feelings. But originally it was probably a kind of a way for me to kind of release a lot of emotions.
And I suppose you have to distill your words and your emotions with poetry, don't you? You have to.
get down to the nitty gritty. This is it. Yeah, it's a different kind of form to prose, all right. And it's a lot more. It suits my brain, I suppose, because it's kind of thinking about things and cutting them down and making them as specific as possible.
Yeah, that's it. It is. It's concentrated.
I really love it. I love the act of writing. I think it's brilliant.
That's fascinating because, you know, if you are, as you did, suffer with a mental health issue, one would imagine that the distilling it and concentrating it is quite painful.
And sometimes I look back at the poems that I wrote during that time, and you know, now maybe I can feel the kind of the sadness of it all, but at the time it was just a way to get things out, you know. And I was probably a bit numb as well to what was actually going on. And now that I am in a better place in my life, you know, I can feel things. My feelings are more accessible, maybe more so than I'd like. So I can experience it all.
And Molly, you did get through it, and people get through it, don't they? You know, and that's an important message.
Yeah, that's the main thing, you know. I mean, it's really hard, you know, suffering with an eating disorder in particular. It feels really stressful and horrific for everyone involved, not only the person suffering, but those who it surrounds them and loves them and cares for them and wants them to be happy. You know, it's really, and my heart goes out to anyone who is struggling today, because it's really such a horrific thing to be dealt with.
Have you read Ivana Lynch's book, The Opposite of Butterfly?
I have, I did indeed. Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
It gives you a great understanding, doesn't it, of, well, you lived through it, so you didn't need that. It's a detailed account. So tonight, West Cork Literary Festival. And you have a playlist, you know. Are you like a rock band? Do you swim in a playlist?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, yeah, I do. I usually have a few poems that I like to read, you know, that are the ones that I return to. And then it does depend on the feeling of the night and how what I think the audience might react to, what I think they'd like to hear. So my what I read generally does change. It's not super fixed, but I do have those few kind of concrete poems that I return to for, as you know, a sense of reassurance for myself as well.
Yeah, sort of greatest hits, I suppose. And I say that seriously. I'm not, you know, because that's,
yeah.
And then you read the room, and if they like a particular type of poem, you may have more of those in your Now that we've spoken to you about your eating disorder, and I'm looking at the poem you want to read, and it's fitting that you would read that first, because there's a context for it now.
And
would you read that for us then, the drop off, and we'll finish up on that today? Yeah.
Absolutely, thank you. So this poem is about my father driving me to the residential treatment centre. So it's called The Drop-Off. Everything's a blur. You don't play Talking Heads, Bob Dylan, talk about work or your iffy stomach. You read the road as if it's encrypted with what a father should say on a drive like this. Should I apologise for your missed appointments, unread emails? There is always someone who needs you more. Mostly, I'm sorry that I'm not as happy as you raised me to be. I want to ask the GPS the quickest route to end this silence. When we reach the centre, you pull up and go straight for the boot. This is what you know to do, to lift the heavy thing. Tell me to take your good umbrella. You drag my suitcase to the door, where the nurse stands with a notepad and clutches your arm. I'll come back soon, you say, but she smiles and says it's better if you don't.
Molly Toomey, thanks so much for that, and congratulations again on receiving the bursary, the Ireland Chair of Poetry bursary, and good luck tonight at the West Cork Literary Festival. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks, William.
Mind yourself. Bye now.
Bye.
That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock live from Galway. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.